Opening my eyes, I saw that it was the false dawn, with the first light of the approaching day reflected against the skies behind the mountains, and resumed the posture of contemplation. Masary ahead of me awoke to life. First there had been the air of a sleeping town, a dead, inert hulk. Next, a gentle sighing, as of a sleeper awakening. It grew to a murmur and developed to a deep hum, like the drone of bees on a hot summer's day. Occasionally there was the call of a trumpet, like the muted chirp of a distant bird, and the deep growl of a conch, like a bullfrog calling in a marsh. It increased. Little groups of shaven heads passed and repassed behind the open windows, windows which in the earlier pre-dawn light had looked like the empty eye sockets of a clean-picked skull. I grew older, and I grew stiffer, but I dared not move, I dared not fall asleep, for if I moved and failed my test, then I had nowhere to go. I had made it very clear that if the Lamasri did not want me, then nor did he. But of the various buildings, going about their mysterious businesses, small boys wandered around, sometimes kicking a shower of dust and small stones in my direction, or making ribald remarks. There was no response from me. They soon tired of the abortive sport and went away in search of more cooperative victims. Gradually, as the light at eventide began to fail, the little butter lamps again flickered into life within the Lamasri buildings. Soon the darkness was relieved merely by the faint star glow, for this was the time when the moon rose late, in our saying. The moon was now young and could not travel fast. Came sick with apprehension. Was I forgotten? Another test, one in which I had to be deprived of all food. The long day I had not stirred, and now I was faint with hunger. Suddenly hope flared in me, and I almost jumped to my feet. There was a shuffling noise and a dark outline approached. Very large black mastiff dragging something along. He took no notice of me, but went on his nocturnal mission quite uncaring of my plight. My hopes fell. I could have wept. To prevent myself being so weak, I reminded myself that only girls and women were as stupid as that. At last I heard the old man approaching. This time he gazed more benignly upon me and said, "Food and drink, my son, but the end is not yet. There is still the morrow, so take care that you do not move, for so very many fail at the 11th hour." He turned and went away. I had drunk the tea, and again transferred the tsampa to my own bowl. Again I lay down, certainly no happier than the night before. As I lay there I wondered at the injustice of it. I did not want to be a monk of any sect, shape, or size. No more choice than a pack animal being driven over a mountain pass. So I fell asleep. A day, as I sat in my attitude of contemplation, I could feel myself becoming weaker, and giddy. I seemed to swim in a miasma compounded of buildings, bright-colored lights, purple patches, with mountains and monks liberally interspersed. Determined effort I managed to shake off this attack of vertigo. It really frightened me to think that I might fail now, after all the suffering I had had. By now the stones beneath me seemed to have grown knife edges which chafed me in inconvenient places. In one of my lighter moments I thought how glad I was that I was not a hen hatching eggs, and compelled to sit even longer than I. The sun seemed to stand still, the day appeared endless, but at long last the light began to fail, and the evening wind commenced to play with a feather dropped by a passing bird. Lights appeared in the windows, one by one. "Hope I die tonight," I thought, "can't stick any more of this." Just then the tall figure of the master of the acolytes appeared in the distant doorway. "Come here," he called, trying to rise with my stiffened legs. I pitched forward onto my face. "If you want a rest you can stay there another night." "Not wait longer." Hastily I grabbed my bundle and tottered towards him. "Enter," he said, "and attend evening service, then see me in the morning." It was warm inside, and there was the comforting smell of incense. My hunger-sharpened senses told me there was food quite near, so I followed a crowd moving to the right. Food, tsampa, buttered tea. Edged my way to the front row as if I had had a lifetime of practice. Monks made ineffectual grabs at my pigtail as I scrambled between their legs, but I was after food and nothing was going to stop me now. Better with some food inside me, I followed the crowd to the inner temple and the evening service. I was too tired to know anything about it, but no one took any notice of me. As the monks filed out I slipped behind a giant pillar, and stretched out on the stone floor, with my bundle beneath my head. I slept. A stunning crash. I thought my head had split, and the sound of voices. New boy. Highborn. Come on, let's scrag him. One of the crowd of acolytes was waving my spare robe, which he had pulled from under my head. Another had my felt boots. Squashy mass of Tsampa caught me in the face. Blows and kicks were rained upon me, but I did not resist, thinking it might be part of the test, to see if I obeyed the 16th of the laws, which ordered, bear suffering and distress with patience and meekness. There was a sudden loud bellow, what's going on here? And whisper, oh, it's old Rattlebones on the prowl. As I clawed the Tsampa from my eyes, the master of the acolytes reached down and dragged me to my feet by my pigtail, softly. Weakling. You one of the future leaders? Take that, and that. Blows, hard ones, absolutely showered upon me. Worthless weakling, can't even defend yourself. Blows seemed non-ending. I fancied I heard old Sue's farewell saying, acquit yourself. Well, remember all I have taught you. Unthinkingly I turned and applied a little pressure as Tsu had taught me. Stu was caught by surprise and with a gasp of pain he flew over my head, hit the stone floor, and skidded along on his nose, taking all the skin off, and coming to rest when his head hit a stone pillar with a loud onk. The end of all my worries, the world seemed to stand still. In their breath, draw the tool, bony monk leapt to his feet, blood streaming from his nose. Roaring all right, roaring with laughter. Young game cock, eh? Or cornered rat, which, that's what we must find out. And pointing to a tall, ungainly boy of 14, he said, you, Ngawang, you are the biggest bully in this lamaserie. See if the son of a yak driver is better than the son of a prince when it comes to fighting. Was grateful to Tsu, the old police monk. He had been a champion judo expert of calm. He had taught me, as he said, all he knew. Fight with fully grown men, and in this science, where strength or age does not count, I had become very proficient indeed. Now that I knew that my future depended on the result of this fight, I was at last quite happy. The Tibetan system is different and more advanced, but I shall call it judo in this book as the Tibetan name would convey nothing to Western readers. Ngawang was a strong and well-built boy, but very ungainly in his movements. I could see that he was used to rough and tumble fighting, where his strength was in his favor. He rushed at me, intending to grip me and make me helpless. Now, thanks to Tsu and his, at times, brutal training, Ngawang rushed. I moved aside and lightly twisted his arm. His feet skidded from under him. He turned a half circle and landed on his head. For a moment he lay groaning, then sprang to his feet and leapt at me. I sank to the ground and twisted a leg as he passed over me. Spun around and landed on his left shoulder. Was not satisfied. He circled warily, then jumped aside and grasped a heavy incense burner, which he swung at me by its chains. A weapon is slow, cumbersome, and very easy to avoid. I stepped beneath his flailing arms, and lightly stabbed a finger to the base of his neck, as Tsu had so often showed me. He went, like a rock on a mountainside, his nerveless fingers relinquishing their grip on the chains, and causing the censer to plummet like a slingshot at the group of watching boys and monks. Ang was unconscious for about half an hour. That special touch is often used to free the spirit from the body for astral traveling and similar purposes. Stepped forward to me, gave me a slap on the back which almost sent me flat on my face, and made the somewhat contradictory statement, boy, you are a man. My greatly daring reply was, then have I earned some food, sir? Please, I have had very little of late. My boy, eat and drink your fill. Then tell one of these hooligans, you are their master now, to show you to me. Who had brought me food before I entered the lamaserie came and spoke to me. My son, you have done well. Ngawang was the bully of the acolytes. Now you take his place and control with kindness and compassion. You have been taught well. See that your knowledge is used well, and does not fall into the wrong hands. Now come with me and I will get you food and drink. Tsu greeted me amiably when I went to his room. Sit, boy, sit. I am going to see if your educational prowess is as good as your physical. I'm going to try to catch you, boy, so watch out. Me an amazing number of questions, some oral, some written. Hours we sat opposite each other on our cushions, then he expressed himself as satisfied. I felt like a badly tanned yak hide, soggy and limp. He stood up, follow me, I am going to take you to the Lord Abbot. Usual honor, but you will learn why. Come. The wide corridors I followed him, past the religious offices, past the inner temples, and the schoolrooms. Through more winding corridors, past the halls of the gods, and the storage places of herbs, until, at last, we emerged on the flat roof and walked towards the Lord Abbot's house, which was built upon it. Then through the gold panel doorway, past the golden Buddha, round by the symbol of medicine, and into the Lord Abbot's private room. Bow, boy, bow, and do as I do. Lord, here is the boy Tuesday Lobsang Rampa. Bowed three times, then prostrated himself upon the floor. I did the same, panting with eagerness to do the right thing in the right way. Lord Abbot looked at us and said, sit. We sat upon cushions, cross-legged, in the Tibetan way. For a long time the Lord Abbot remained looking at me, but not speaking. He said, Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, I know all about you, all that has been predicted. Your trial of endurance has been harsh, but with good reason. That reason you will know in later years. Know now that of every 1,000 monks, only one is fitted for higher things, for higher development, and do their daily task. They are the manual workers, those who turn the prayer wheels without wondering why. We are not short of them. We are short of those who will carry on our knowledge. When later our country is under an alien cloud, you will be specially trained, intensively trained, and in a few short years you will be given more knowledge than a Lama normally acquires in a long lifetime. It will be hard, and often it will be painful. To force clairvoyance is painful, and to travel in the astral planes requires nerves that nothing can shatter, and a determination as hard as the rocks. And hard, taking it all in, it all seemed too difficult to me. Jetic, he went on, you will be trained here in medicine and in astrology. Will be given every assistance which we can render. Will also be trained in the esoteric arts. Path is mapped for you, Tuesday Lobsang Rampa. Although you are but 7 years of age, I speak to you as a man, for thus you have been brought up. Into his head, and the master of the acolytes rose and bowed deeply. Together we made our way out. Again in the master's room did he break the silence. You will have to work hard all the time. Pew all we can. Now I will have you taken to get your head shaved. Boy enters the priesthood. His head is shaved with the exception of one lock. Is removed when the boy is given the priest name, and his former name is discarded. But more of that a little further on. Led me through winding ways to a small room, the barber shop, to sit on the floor. Tam Cho, the master said, shave this boy's head. The name lock as well, for he is being given his name immediately. Tam Cho stepped forward, grasped my pigtail in his right hand and lifted it straight up. Lovely pigtail, well buttered, well cared for, a pleasure to saw it off. From somewhere he produced a huge pair of shears, the sort our servants used for cutting plants. Dish, he roared, come and hold up this end of rope. The assistant came running forward and held up my pigtail so tightly that I was almost lifted off the ground. With his tongue protruding, and with many little grunts, Tam Cho manipulated those deplorably blunt shears, until my pigtail was severed. Was just the start. Brought a bowl of hot water, so hot that I jumped off the floor in anguish when it was poured on my head. Boy replied that I was, and he said, never mind that, it makes the hair easier to remove. Sided razor, very like the thing we had at home for scraping floors. Lee, after an eternity, it seemed to me, my head was denuded of hair. Come with me, said the master, and produced a big book. What are we to call you? Mumbling to himself, then, ah, here we are. From now on you will be called Zamigma Lalu. This book, however, I shall continue to use the name of Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, as it is easier for the reader. Feeling as naked as a new laid egg, I was taken to a class. I had such a good education at home, I was considered to know more than the average, so was put in the class of the 17-year-old acolytes. Like a dwarf among giants, the others had seen how I had handled Ngawang, so I had no trouble except for the incident of one big, stupid boy. He came up behind me and put his dirty great hands on my very sore pate. It was just a matter of reaching up and jabbing my fingers into the ends of his elbows to send him away screaming with pain. Try knocking two funny bones at once, and see. Well, the judo instructors whom I was to meet later in the week, all knew Tsu, all said he was the finest judo adept in the whole of Tibet. From boys, a teacher, who had had his back turned when the boy put his hands on my head, had soon noticed what was happening. He laughed so much at the result that he let us go early. It was now about 8:30 in the evening, so we had about 3/4 of an hour to spare before temple service at 9:15. My joy was short-lived. As we were leaving the room, a lama beckoned to me. I went to him and he said, "Come with me." Wondering what fresh trouble was in store, he turned into a music room where there were about 20 boys whom I knew to be entrants like myself. 3 musicians sat at their instruments, one at a drum, one had a conch, and the other a silver trumpet. Mama said, "We will sing so that I may test your voices for the choir." The musicians started, playing a very well-known air which everyone could sing. Our voices. The music master raised his eyebrows. The look on his face was replaced by one of real pain. Up went his 2 hands in protest. "Stop! Stop!" he shouted. "Even the gods must try that. This. Now start again and do it properly." And again, again we were stopped. This time the music master came straight to me. "Dolt," he exclaimed, "you are trying to make fun of me. We will have the musicians play, and you sing alone as you will not sing in company." And the music started. Again I raised my voice in song. Master waved to me in a frenzy. "Mr. Lobsang, your talents do not include music. Never in my 55 years here have I heard such an off-key voice." "Off-key? No key at all. You will not sing again. In sessions you will study other things. Services you will not sing, or your disharmony will ruin all. Now go, you unmusical vandal." I fiddled around until I heard the trumpets announcing that it was time to assemble for the last service. Last night, good gracious, was it only last night that I had entered the Lamasery? It seemed ages. I felt that I was walking in my sleep, and I was hungry again. Perhaps that was just as well. If I had been full, I should have dropped off to sleep. Someone grabbed my robe, and I was swung up in the air. A huge, friendly-looking lama had hoisted me up to his broad shoulder. "For service, and then you'll catch it. You miss your supper, you know, if you are late, and you feel as empty as a drum." He entered the temple still carrying me and took his place just at the back of the boy's cushions. Carefully he placed me on a cushion in front of him. "Face me, boy, and make the same responses as I do, but when I sing, you, ha ha exclamation mark, keep quiet." For his help, so few people had ever been kind to me. Instruction I had had in the past had been yelled in one end, or knocked in the other. I must have dozed, because I came to with a start to find that the service had ended and the big lama had carried me, asleep, to the refectory and put tea, sampa, and some boiled vegetables in front of me. "You were to sleep, for this night you can sleep until 5 in the morning. Then come to me." That is the last thing I heard until at 5 in the morning I was awakened, with difficulty, by a boy who had been friendly the day before. I saw that I was in a large room, and was resting on 3 cushions. "Mama Miniadon up told me to see that you were awakened at 5. Up I got and piled my cushions against a wall as I saw the others had done. "Out," and the boy with me said, "we must hurry for breakfast, then I have to take you to the Lama Miniadon up." I liked the place, or wanted to stay. It did occur to me that as I had no choice whatever, I should be my own best friend if I settled without any fuss. At breakfast, the reader was droning out something from one of the 112 volumes of the Kanjaya, the Buddhist scriptures. He must have seen that I was thinking of something else, for he rapped out, "You, small new boy there, what did I say last?" Quick like a flash, and quite without thinking, I replied, "Sir, you said that boy is not listening. I'll catch him." Certainly raised a laugh and saved me from a hiding for inattention. Reader smiled, a rare event, and explained that he had asked for the text from the scriptures, but I could get away with it this time. Meals. Readers stand at a lectern and read from sacred books. Are not allowed to talk at meals, nor to think of food. With their food. All sat on the floor, on cushions, and ate from a table which was about 18 inches high. We were not permitted to make any noise at meal times, and we were absolutely banned from resting our elbows on the table. The discipline at Chakpurai was indeed iron. Chakpurai means iron mountain. In most lamasaries there was little organized discipline or routine. Could work or laze as they pleased. Perhaps 1 in 1,000 wanted to make progress, and they were the ones who became lamas. For lama means superior one and is not applied to all and sundry. The discipline was strict, even fiercely so. To be specialists, leaders of our class, and for us order and training was considered to be utterly essential. We boys were not allowed to use the normal white robes of an acolyte, but had to wear the russet of the accepted monk. Domestic workers as well, but these monks were servant monks who saw to the housekeeping side of the lamasery. Took turns at domestic work to make sure that we did not get exalted ideas. The old Buddhist saying, "Be yourself the example, do only good, and no harm to others." The essence of Buddha's teaching, our Lord Abbot, the Lama Champala, was as strict as my father, and demanded instant obedience. One of his sayings was, "Reading and writing are the gates of all qualities," so we got plenty to do in that line. 5. Life as a Kila. Our day started at midnight at Chakpurai. As the midnight trumpet sounded, echoing through the dimly lit corridors, we would roll sleepily off our bed cushions and fumble in the darkness for our robes. In the nude, the usual system in Tibet where there is no false modesty. Thou our robes on, off we would go, tucking our belongings into the pouched up front of our dress. In the passageways we would clatter, not in a good mood at that hour. Part of our teaching was, it is better to rest with a peaceful mind than to sit like Buddha and pray when angry. Reverent thought often was, well, why can't we rest with a peaceful mind? Stunt makes me angry. No one gave me a satisfactory answer, and I had to go with the others into the prayer hall. Rubble butter lamps struggled to shed their rays of light through the drifting clouds of incense smoke. Shifting shadows, the giant sacred figures seemed to become alive, to bow and sway in response to our chants. Monks and boys would sit cross-legged on cushions on the floor. All would sit in rows the length of the hall. Rows would face each other so that the first and second rows would be face to face, the second and third would be back to back, and so on. We would have our chants and sacred songs which employ special tonal scales, because in the East it is realized that sounds have power. As a musical note can shatter a glass, so can a combination of notes build up metaphysical power. Would also be readings from the Kanjaya. It was a most impressive sight to see these hundreds of men in blood-red robes and golden stoles, swaying and chanting in unison, with the silver tinkle of little bells, and the throbbing of drums. Blue clouds of incense smoke coiled and wreathed about the knees of the gods, and every so often it seemed, in the uncertain light, that one or other of the figures was gazing straight at us. It lasted about an hour, then we would return to our sleeping cushions until 4 in the morning. Service would start at about 4:15. At 5 we would have our first meal of tsampa and buttered tea. Even at this meal the reader would be droning out his words and the disciplinarian would be watchful at his side. At this meal any special orders or information would be given. It might be that something was wanted from Lhasa. And then at the breakfast meal the names of the monks would be called, those who were going to take or collect the goods. They would also be given special dispensation to be away from the lamasery for such and such a time, and to miss a certain number of services. 6 o'clock we would be assembled in our classrooms ready for the first session of our studies. 2nd of our Tibetan laws was, you shall perform religious observances, and study. But understand why we had to obey that law. 1 The 5th law, you shall honor your elders, and those of high birth, was flaunted and broken. All my experience had led me to believe that there was something shameful in being of high birth. Certainly I had been victimized for it. Then that it is not the rank of birth that matters, but the character of the person concerned. We attended another service at 9 in the morning, interrupting our studies for about 40 minutes. Quite a welcome break, sometimes. But we had to be in class again by 9:45, and subject was started then, and we had to work at it until 1 o'clock. Still we were not free to eat. A half-hour service came first and then we had our buttered tea and tsampa. All labor followed, to give us exercise and to teach us humility. And more often than not to collect the messiest of most unpleasant type of job. 3 o'clock saw us trooping off for an hour of enforced rest. We were not allowed to talk or move, but just had to lie still. This was not a popular time because the hour was too short for a sleep and too long to stay idle. The things to do. Period of the day, 5 hours without a break, 5 hours when we could not leave the room for anything without incurring the severest penalties. Teachers were quite free with their stout canes and some of them tackled the punishment of offenders with real enthusiasm. Neither badly pressed or most foolhardy pupils asked to be excused when punishment on one's return was inevitable. Our release came at 9 o'clock when we had the last meal of the day. And this was buttered tea and sampa. Sometimes, only sometimes, we had vegetables, usually that meant sliced turnips, or some very small beans raw, but to hungry boys they were very acceptable. On one unforgettable occasion, when I was 8, we had some pickled walnuts, particularly fond of them, having had them often at home. How, foolishly, I tried to work in exchange with another boy, he to have my spare robe in exchange for his pickled walnuts. I was called to the middle of the hall and made to confess my sin. And for greediness I had to remain without food or drink for 24 hours. My spare robe was taken from me as it was said that I had no use for it, having been willing to barter it for that which was not essential. At 9:30 we went to our sleeping cushions. Bed to us was late for bed. The long hours would kill me. I thought that I should drop dead at any moment, or that I would fall asleep and never again awaken. Stye, and the other new boys, used to hide in corners for a good doze. After quite a short time I became used to the long hours and took no notice at all of the length of the day. Before 6 in the morning when, with the help of the boy who had awakened me, I found myself in front of the Lama Miniadonup's door, although I had not knocked, he called for me to enter. His room was a very pleasant one and there were wonderful wall paintings, some of them actually painted on the walls and others painted on silk and hanging. A few small statuettes were on low tables, they were of gods and goddesses and were made of jade, gold, and cloisonne. Knife also hung upon the wall. Was sitting in the lotus attitude on his cushion and before him, on a low table, he had a number of books, one of which he was studying as I entered. Sit here with me, Lobsang, he said, we have a lot of things to discuss together. But first an important question to a growing man. Have you had enough to eat and drink? I assured him that I had. The Lord Abbot has said that we can work together based your previous incarnation and it was a good one. Now we want to redevelop certain powers and abilities you then had. Based of a very few years we want you to have more knowledge than a Lama has in a very long life. He paused, and looked at me long and hard, piercing. All men must be free to choose their own path, he continued. Your way will be hard for 40 years, if you take the right path, but it will lead to great benefits in the next life. The wrong path now will give you comforts, softness, and riches in this life, but you will not develop alone can choose. He stopped, and looked at me. Sir, I replied, my father told me that if I failed at the Lamasery I was not to return home. How then would I have softness and comfort if I had no home to which to return? The right path if I choose it. Smiled at me and answered, have you already forgotten? If you choose the wrong path, the path of softness, you will be installed in a Lamasery as a living incarnation, and in a very few years will be an abbot in charge. Did not call that failure. The way he spoke made me ask a further question. Would you consider it a failure? He replied, knowing what I know, I would call it a failure. And who will show me the way? I will be your guide if you take the right path, but you are the one to choose. No one can influence your decision. Looked at him, stared at him, liked what I saw. A big man, with keen black eyes, a broad open face, and a high forehead. Liked what I saw. Although only 7 years of age, I had had a hard life, and met many people, and really could judge if a man was good, I said, I would like to be your pupil and take the right path. I added somewhat truthfully, I suppose, but I still don't like hard work. He laughed, and his laugh was deep and warming. None of us really like hard work, but few of us are truthful enough to admit it. Through his papers, we shall need to do a little operation to your head soon to force clairvoyance, and then we will speed your studies hypnotically. We are going to take you far in metaphysics, as well as in medicine. But gloomy, more hard work. Seemed to me that I had had to work hard all my 7 years, and there seemed to be little play, or kite flying. Oh my thoughts. Oh yes, young man, the real thing, man lifters. First we must map out how best to arrange these studies into his papers, and riffle through them. Let me see, 9 o'clock until 1 will do for a start. I'm here every day at 9, instead of attending service, and we will see what interesting things we can discuss. Starting from tomorrow. Message for your father and mother. Seeing them today, giving them your pigtail. I was quite overcome. When a boy was accepted by a Lamasery, his pigtail was cut off and his head shaved. The pigtail would be sent to the parents, carried by a small acolyte, as a symbol that their son had been accepted. Now the Lama Miniadon Up was taking my pigtail to deliver in person. It meant that he had accepted me as his own personal charge, as his spiritual son. This Lama was a very important man, a very clever man, one who had a most enviable reputation throughout Tibet. That I could not fail under such a man.